followed the woman down a long corridor, and she opened the door to a massive office where Jun Qing sat in an oversized chair. Two of Qing's men were positioned near the door, while two other men stood on both sides of him. "Jun Qing?" I nodded at him. His face was emotionless as he stared at me, silently, causing me to wonder if he was going to greet us. Finally, after a few seconds, he stood and said, "Mr. Duncan, I was expecting Vegas to be with you. These are my sons, Orlando and Junior. I think you know my son-in-law, Harris, who is our attorney." Without offering his hand, he said, "You gentlemen may have a seat." I waited until everyone was seated before I spoke. "June, your family has known me for a long time, and I wanted to make sure you knew I had nothing to do with your father's and uncle's deaths. That is what Vegas tells me, but I must admit I find it hard to believe that your brother killed them without your knowledge. I can understand your point of view, and if I were you, I might come to the same conclusion, which is why I wanted to clear the air and bring you proof of my innocence." I gestured to Harris, who opened his briefcase and handed June a folder. "My brother has been in a mental hospital for almost 15 years, I explained as he thumbed through the folder. "9 months ago, they somehow miraculously deemed him competent and released him without my knowledge or consent. Neither June nor his associates seemed impressed until I ripped open my shirt dramatically, revealing the scars from the bullets that had been removed from my chest. He then came to my place of business and shot me 3 times. Harris handed him another folder with my medical records. "I should have been his first victim, not your loved ones." June sat back in his chair, contemplating my words. "I'd heard you were shot. My father even came to visit you. Although, like me, I'm sure he did not know it was your brother who shot you." June handed the paperwork back to Harris. "I'm glad you came by to explain this. It has helped to stop what could have been an uneasy conflict between us." The men beside him stepped back a fraction of an inch, and the tension in the air came down a notch. "Well, I'm glad to hear that," I said. "If you didn't know, we've put a sizable bounty on my brother's head." "We did know. It's the only reason we were willing to meet with you." He leaned forward, finally offering his hand. "Thank you for coming." I grasped his hand firmly. "I have something else for you to see." Orlando took out his phone and showed June the video. "My brother and his sons are the men on the right in the video. The man on the left is Vinny Dash," he said, finishing my sentence. "Why is your brother with Vinny Dash?" June looked over at me, and I could see his anger growing. "Did Vinny have something to do with my father's death?" "We don't know that, but we do know that Vinny has supplied him with enough heroin to make a deal with the Dominicans and a few of our best customers," Orlando told him. "Well over 100 kilos. "Where would Vinny Dash get that much product?" June asked with a frown. "According to our sources, it's yours," Orlando said. "How?" "We haven't provided him with any product." June glanced at his associates curiously. "Are you missing any product?" Orlando asked. June motioned toward the man on his right, and when he leaned down, the two began whispering in their native language. "We did have a container on a freighter that was lost in the recent hurricane. It was being shipped to Puerto Rico. My father wrote it off as a casualty of business, but perhaps it wasn't. June fumed. Orlando informed him. From what we've been told, that container you're talking about ain't at the bottom of the ocean. It somehow turned up at a container terminal in Kingston. June again motioned for the man on his right and whispered something. This time, the man left the room. How do we know that container was ours? Orlando reached into his pocket and pulled out two small vials, which he placed on the glass coffee table in front of us. You probably don't know this, but I'm a chemist and a licensed pharmacist. These are samples of heroin, one we got from a Dominican street dealer yesterday, and the other from one of your associates last night. I tested them, and the chemical breakdown of both are exactly the same. There's no mistaking that the dope my uncle got from Vinny belongs to you. June stared at the two vials sitting on the table, then looked up at me. He knows what he's talking about, June. It cost me a fortune to put him through pharmacy school, and he graduated at the top of his class. I chuckled, attempting to lighten the mood. It didn't work, because now June looked like he was ready to rip someone's head off. Actually, that wasn't a bad thing, because I could help him direct his anger right where we needed it. Obviously, you didn't come here unprepared. What do you have in mind? June asked. We have a plan that I'm sure you will find beneficial to both of us. Harris and I have another meeting to attend. Orlando will stay here and give you the details, I said as I stood. Thank you. When we exited the building and were in the car, Harris turned to me and said,
Are you crazy? You're going to leave Orlando by himself to handle something like this? LC, we have to make sure nothing goes wrong. You should have stayed.
Calm down, Harris. Orlando can handle this, and Junior's there. Me and you have bigger fish to fry right now.
We do?
Harris replied, looking confused and a little scared.
Donna, 43.
Sasha, damn it! Stop acting like a child and answer the phone! I shouted into my cell as I pulled into my driveway. I'd been calling and texting my bratty daughter nonstop ever since the charity auction she'd stomped out of, but she wouldn't answer. I was starting to think she'd block me, which was no way to treat your mother, no matter how mad you are at her. Hell, for all she knew, this could be the last call I ever made, or worse. I could be dead in the morning. And all this because I'd outbid her on some doctor who could barely keep it up. After leaving a scolding message, I took out the endless number of shopping bags I had managed to collect after my trip at Roosevelt Field Mall and headed toward the house. I stepped inside my townhome, the heels of my Oscar de la Renta pumps clicking on the marble floor as I walked the short distance to the alarm system keypad. I didn't hear the beeping noise that normally came from the wall panel, and when I reached it, I saw that the alarm had been deactivated. I could have sworn I turned the alarm on when I left the house that afternoon, but I chalked it up to a senior moment. Then suddenly, I stopped, sensing that there was movement in the house and I wasn't alone.
Sasha?
I called out. Maybe she'd decided to grace me with her presence, I thought for a second. But as I slowly moved into the den to investigate, my heart seized with fear.
Who the hell are you? What the hell are you doing in my home?
I gasped, backing away from a man I'd never seen before, only to spot another man standing on the opposite side of the room. I dropped the shopping bags and clutched my expensive purse against my chest with both hands. No way was I giving up my shit.
What do you want?
Neither of them said a word as they began moving toward me.
Fuck! Was I about to die? No, I was a survivor. No way was I going to lose my life over shit that could be replaced. I held my handbag out toward them. You want money?
Here, take my purse. There's probably $1,000 in there and 15 credit cards. The purse itself is worth $4,000. Instead of taking it from my hands, the two men just crept closer, staring at me. That's when I realized maybe it wasn't money they were after. Please, please don't rape me. I begged them. My keys are in the purse. You can take my car, too. It's the Maserati parked right out front. Then, the sound of laughter came from the doorway leading into the dining room. I looked over to see a face I hadn't seen in years. This time, I dropped the purse in the middle of the floor.
Oh, my God. If you could see your face, he said, still laughing.
Larry, you fucking bastard. Where the hell did you come from? I stood staring at my ex-brother-in-law as hard as the two strange men had been staring at me. I hadn't seen Larry in almost 18 years. As a matter of fact, his brother Lou and I were still together, and Sasha was just a toddler at the time. And how did you get into my house?
The front door. You know I've always been resourceful. I picked the lock.
Okay. That answered one question, but how the hell did he manage to get past a state-of-the-art burglar alarm system?
And you and Lou always used Sasha's birthday as your alarm code, he said, answering the question I hadn't voiced out loud.
He smiled as he walked over and tried to give me a hug that I didn't reciprocate.
How are you, Donna? Now you can believe it or not, but I missed you.
I thought you were... I didn't want to say it, so he said it for me.
In the nut house?
I shrugged my shoulders. Well, yeah, that's what I was told. They said you went bonkers.
From who? LC?
No. Lou told me a few years before he died.
So what's up, Donna? You don't look happy to see me,
Larry said, sounding like this was just a normal social call instead of the bizarre break-in that it was.
I'm not used to finding uninvited guests in my house, Larry,
I said, not hiding my annoyance. Now that I wasn't as scared, my attitude was back in full force.
And who the fuck are these scary-ass guys?
I glanced over at the two men.
Those are my boys.
You may not remember my youngest, Kenny, but you remember Curtis, don't you? Now that I took a closer look, there was no mistaking the menacing man I'd spotted first. His face was a perfect combination of Larry and Nene. Yeah, I remember badass Curtis. He gave me the best laugh of my life when he cut off both of London's pigtails. I chuckled at the memory. I thought Chippy was going to lose her damn mind the way she was jumping around screaming about those damn pigtails.
Damn, I forgot all about that.
He joined in my laughter. She wasn't so high and mighty that day, was she?
She sure as hell wasn't.
And poor London looked a hot mess for a few months.
Despite our earlier feuds during our younger years, what most people didn't know was that Larry and I got along. Maybe it was because we were both outcasts, or maybe he just decided I was here to stay. I don't know why, but I could relate to him more than anyone else in the family besides Lou.
You still drink bourbon?
Let me fix you a drink, I offered.
I sure do, but I actually have a surprise for you.
He took me by the arm and led me into the dining room, where I saw the table had been set for four, and dinner was prepared like it was the most normal thing in the world.
How long have you been in my house, Larry?
I asked.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe 10-15 minutes after you left this afternoon.
He sat down at the table, then patted the seat beside him for me to sit.
Come sit.
Although I didn't like the fact that he'd broken into my house after all these years, I had sense enough to do what Larry instructed. He had never done anything to harm me, but it was no secret that he had done some unthinkable things to others. Here you go. He passed me a glass of wine. Cabernet Sauvignon from Napa Valley. Your favorite. I took the glass from him, but didn't drink. Thank you, I said warily. Don't worry, Donna. I didn't put anything in there to hurt you. You can drink it. He laughed and pointed to the silver ice bucket. Curtis, pass me that bottle. See here? Look. It's Harlan Estate. I stared at the bottle. Sure enough, it was from my favorite vineyard. In normal circumstances, I might have been impressed that he'd remembered my preferences, but all I could think about was what reason he could have to be at my house. I knew he wasn't going to ease up until I drank some wine, so I relented and took the tiniest sip. It didn't taste like he had put anything in it, but to be safe, I held the glass without drinking more. What's this all about, Larry? I frowned. What do you want? You never were one to beat around the bush, were you?
No, that's Chippy's game.
He chuckled. Okay. I'm here because I have a business proposition for you.
A business proposition? What are you talking about? Why would I want to go into business with you?
Because we share a common enemy, and an enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Larry picked up his glass and drank the wine in one gulp.
Me and the boys are going to take LC down, put him straight out of business, and I want you to be my partner.
Oh, really? Just like that, you're going to take down the mighty L.C. Duncan? I asked skeptically.
I've already got him and his brats on the run.
I laughed so hard that I almost spilled my wine. I didn't know what was funnier, the fact that he said he was going to take his brother out of business, or that he seemed as if he actually believed it.
Yeah, you're definitely crazy. How the hell do you think you're going to do that? I'm going to become his biggest competition, Larry said matter-of-factly.
I looked over at Curtis and Kenny to see if they were in on the joke that clearly was being played on me. They stood in the doorway, looking at their father as if what he was saying made sense.
Larry, you can't be serious.
I am, and I need your help.
Help how?
I giggled. He had me so amused at this point, I actually took another sip of wine.
I'm fucking serious. I need an inside person. Someone who can give me the schematics of their house, plant bugs and stuff like that, so I can start planning their demise, he said.
Damn, he wasn't kidding. I put down my glass and shook my head.
No way. I'm not doing that. We come from two totally different worlds. My last name may have been Duncan at one point in time, but I ain't like the rest of y'all. You should know better.
You've always been a bourgeois bitch, Donna.
He sighed.
Everyone knows that.
And you've always been a crazy motherfucker, Larry. I shrugged. Everyone knows that, too. Besides, I don't be in that damn house like that anyway. They'd be suspicious of me right away.
Fine.
He leaned toward me, kind of hovering in my personal space.
Then there's another way you can help.
How?
I need you to recruit your children to our side. They're both important pieces in this chess game we're playing, he stated. We both know what Junior is capable of, and Kenny tells me your daughter is a badass bitch.
I blinked. After the way LC and Chippy had been disrespecting me lately, it would feel like sweet revenge to somehow use my kids against them. But at the same time, it made me uncomfortable because I had no idea what Larry was proposing. So I tried to shoot down his idea.
She is, but she wouldn't do it for me. We're not close like that anymore.
Well then, work on your relationship. You may be a bourgeois bitch, Donna, but you're far from dumb. All you have to do is tell Junior you're his real mama, and his instincts will do the rest. Worst case scenario, he destroys them from the inside. Give LC a little internal strife.
We stared at one another for a few seconds as I mulled it over in my mind. When I made my decision, I told him,
"Hell no. My leverage with my kids is the only thing keeping LC writing checks. Besides, I don't even want my kids involved in this family business crap."
"Look, I don't have a whole lot of time," he said, obviously getting frustrated. "I need to know. Are you with them or me?"
"I'm not trying to waste your time, Larry. I'm just trying to explain."
"My mama said you were going to act like this. That's why she didn't want to come. But I didn't believe her."
He stood up, yelling,
"So spit it out, Donna. Are you in or not?"
What the hell was this crazy fool talking about?
Why would he be bringing his mama into this right now? I had already given him my answer anyway.
"No. I may be a bourgeois bitch, as you call it, but they are still my children, and I love them. I don't want any harm coming to them. If I bring them into this, one, if not both, will end up dead."
"Well, my dear, if you're worried about either of your kids ending up dead, I'll let you know ahead of time. I'm gonna kill them both."
A sinister look came across his face as he started pacing the floor.
"There is a silver lining to all this, though. You won't have to worry about it, because I'm gonna kill you first."
He swung his arm at me hard, and it was a miracle that all he did was graze my face. I felt the wetness on my thigh and realized I'd dropped the glass of wine. I stared at the red stain soaking into my pants leg and dripping onto the floor. My face was stinging, and when I reached up to my cheek, I realized it was wet too. At first, I thought maybe the wine had splattered to my face, but then I looked at my fingers and saw a different shade of red. It was blood. My blood.
"You cut me, you psychotic motherfucker! Now I see why LC had your crazy ass locked away."
I tried to get up from the table, but it was too late. Before I could move, Curtis and Kenny were on each side of me, pulling me up.
"You're fucking crazy! Get the fuck off of me! Larry, you crazy bastard!"
"The enemy of my enemy is my friend, Donna. But you're not acting like a friend. You're acting like you're his friend,"
Larry growled insanely at me. I turned my head and caught a glimpse of the steak knife in his hand as he loomed over me.
"You really are fucking crazy."
"You haven't seen crazy yet,"
he said with an evil grin.
LC, 44. Almost an hour after we'd left Jun Qing, Harris and I were in Brooklyn, parked on Livingston Street. We weren't there long before Vegas slid into the front passenger seat to join us. He had a look of pure satisfaction on his face.
"Where the heck did you come from?"
Harris asked, startled.
"Taking care of something,"
Vegas answered, glancing toward me in the back seat.
"How did everything go with June?"
"Better than we could have hoped for," I replied with a grin. "Orlando and Junior are with him now. Everything in place?"
"Oh, yeah,"
Vegas said confidently, glancing at his watch. "Things should be going down any moment now."
"Can someone please explain to me what the hell is going on?"
Harris whined. He'd been looking annoyed ever since we left Orlando and Junior with Jun Qing. One thing about Harris, he hated to be out of the loop. And with his attitude about London being over in Jamaica, we'd been leaving him out of the loop quite a bit.
"See that building over there?"
Vegas pointed.
"Yeah,"
Harris answered.
"The strip club?"
"Mm-hmm.
Keep your eyes on it."
Harris made a face.
"Why? What's so important about that nasty-ass joint? The girls in there are so low-class."
My son-in-law had issues with remaining faithful in the past, so I wouldn't be surprised if he spent plenty of nights in a private room in this very club. I glared at him, but held my tongue.
Just shut the fuck up and watch, Harris,
Vegas told him, probably thinking the same thing I was. Within a minute, the sirens and horns of an NYPD emergency response team truck were blaring as they pulled up, followed by 6 regular units and 2 undercover. We watched as they entered the club with bulletproof vests, masks, and shields, their guns ready.
Oh, shit! They're raiding that strip club?
Harris yelled.
I'd hate to be in there right now.
Yeah, I bet you would, Vegas said, shooting him a dirty look.
Keep watching. It ain't tits and ass they came looking for.
After a few minutes, they began bringing people out of the building. Half-dressed strippers yelled and complained as they were piled into the backs of vans and police cars. An array of men, from well-dressed businessmen to blue-collared uniform workers, were escorted out.
What are we waiting on? Did our mailman make a pit stop?
Harris quipped.
Shut the hell up,
Vegas said.
I'm getting sick of your sarcasm.
There he is, I said. We watched as a Latino man was brought out in handcuffs and put into the back of an unmarked car.
Who is that?
Harris asked. That's your new client, I told him. His name is Julio Vargas. He was my biggest New York client until a few days ago when he became Larry's biggest client. He's about to be booked for gun possession and possession with the intent to distribute.
You orchestrated this, didn't you? You set him up.
Harris looked miffed, but impressed.
He recently bought 10 kilos from Larry. Now they belong to the NYPD. First thing in the morning, you're going to need to go to his arraignment and eventually bail him out,
Vegas said with a smile. Oh, and make sure you remind him that his bail and legal fees are compliments of L.C. Duncan, I added.
London, 45. It had taken damn near all night, but I had finally convinced Daryl that the easiest way for us to get into Tivoli Gardens was to take the bus and try to blend in with the rest of the people in the neighborhood. For the record, I would just like to say that this is a bad idea, he whispered in my ear as we stepped on the bus. I looked over at him and shook my head. He already looked like he belonged, dressed in a pair of slacks and a long white shirt. It was the same outfit damn near every man on the bus wore. His attire, along with his smooth chocolate skin and his beard, which had grown out since we had been in Jamaica, made him look like he was exactly where he belonged. It's going to work. Stop being so negative, I told him and stared out the window at the people on the streets. There was nothing about us that made me think we would stand out, especially in the various groups of people I saw. The bus came to a stop, and we got off, along with most of the people on the bus, and headed into the neighborhood. I made sure to keep my head down and not make eye contact with anyone. I also didn't say anything for fear that they would recognize my American accent. I figured that once we had gotten further down the street, I would ask about Ruby. Asking about Benny Dash would send up a red flag immediately. My confidence started to diminish as we passed one deteriorated building after another. If it weren't for the women and children sitting outside of them, I would think that they were abandoned, because none of them looked livable with their broken windows, cracked walls, and doors hanging off hinges. I saw Daryl glancing over his shoulder, and then he took my hand rather forcefully and tugged me into a crowded store. I knew not to say anything, because his body language sent a strong enough message that something wasn't right. We walked up and down the aisles until finally he stopped and picked up a jar of something, pretending to examine it. What's wrong? I mumbled, pointing pointing at the label so it would look like we were discussing the item in his hand.
We're being followed.
Are you sure?
He gave me a quick look that said, "What the hell do you think?"
And I looked past him down the aisle. The only person I saw was a guy, about 30 years old, on his cell phone. But I knew Daryl well enough to know that if he said we were being followed, then we probably were.
Come on.
He put the jar back on the shelf, and we quickly walked out of the store. I glanced back and saw a little boy and a teenager walking out behind us. I did not like the look on the older one's face. We sped up the pace for another 2 blocks, then turned onto what looked like a small street but turned out to be an alley. The teenager behind us let out a yelp, and suddenly there were 3 men coming around the corner at the other end of the alley. I stopped in my tracks when I saw that the one in the middle was holding a machete, and his partners by his side held large knives. I turned around, and the boys were still behind us, standing there like they were prepared to stop us from going back.
"We don't want no trouble," Daryl said. "We're just filmmakers scouting out locations for a documentary we're making."
"Is that so, man?"
yelled one of the men who were now approaching us from the other end of the alley.
"That's right," Daryl told him, easing his revolver out of his waistband. "You want some? Then come and get it."
He raised his gun. My heart raced as I reached in my purse for my own gun and got into position. Daryl's arm went up to protect me. We were at a standstill for a few heated seconds until they realized their weapons were no match for our bullets. They stopped advancing and lowered their weapons to their sides.
"Get the fuck out!"
the man yelled at us. We moved quickly, our guns still pointed as we backed out, past the boys who had stepped to the side, and then we hauled ass down the street.
"Put your gun away," Daryl told me, and I didn't hesitate to do it.
I looked back, and now, in addition to the men we had faced in the alley, there were another 4 with them, all walking behind us. They kept their distance but made it clear they wouldn't stop following us until we got the hell out of their neighborhood. We didn't slow down as we hustled down 4 blocks and crossed the main street that led out of Tivoli Gardens. Then we went another 2 blocks before Daryl finally stopped. When I finally caught my breath, I asked, "How did you know they didn't have guns?"
"I didn't. I took a chance," he said.
"What the fuck, Daryl? That was pretty risky, wasn't it?" He shrugged.
"Better than being dead, but maybe not as much as you think. Believe it or not, you get caught with a gun here in Jamaica, that's some serious shit. A gun charge here ain't no simple 6-month sentence like back in the States. They give you a year for each bullet. Now, I'm sure Vinny's guys have guns, but the average thug's just carrying a machete or a knife down here. And they will use those fucking knives for sure. If they don't kill you, they'll cut off your feet."
I looked down at the black Tory Burch flats on my feet, the simplest shoes I owned. Thank God I hadn't been wearing heels as we ran for our lives.
"Wow."
"Exactly."
Daryl nodded. "Oh, and London?"
"Yeah?"
"Risky was coming down here in the first place. I told you this shit was a bad idea."
Sasha, 46. "About time you got here. We were supposed to leave an hour ago."
I rolled my eyes at Junior and hopped in the passenger's side of the car. I knew I had been the holdup, but I didn't care. Hell, I didn't even want to go. But Uncle Elsie in Vegas had tasked the two of us with heading upstate to the mental facility that had housed Uncle Larry for nearly 2 decades to see what information we could get. "Let's just hurry up so we can get back. Paris and I got plans for later tonight," I told him. Junior laughed. "You and Paris always got plans. Don't worry. I want to get back here as fast as you do, because me and my wife got plans, too." "What kind of plans you got?" I eyed him. Junior was the least social member of the Duncan family. He pretty much never went out, other than to take Sonia somewhere, and I couldn't remember the last time they went to a club. I always teased him about being the strong, silent type. He was just as handsome as his brothers and Uncle L.C., but Junior was bigger, way bigger than them, and he was as strong as an ox. I always felt safe around him, even as a kid. Paris may have been like a sister to me, but there had always been a connection between me and Junior. Maybe it was because he was so close to my father. What you mean, what kind of plans do I got? I'm a newly married man with a gorgeous bride at home waiting for me. I plan to make the whole damn house shake, he joked. Seeing him so happy and in love with Sonia really made me happy. I knew that he was going to make a great father, but still. Ew, TMI. I shook my head. TMI. I know you ain't talking. With all of the information you and Paris find it necessary to volunteer. That was nothing, and you know it. I took out my cell phone and turned it on. It had been off since the night before because of my mother, who had been calling and texting nonstop. After that stunt she pulled at the auction, I was done with her for real. You couldn't tell me she didn't do that shit on purpose. Since then, she'd been trying desperately to reach me, but I was ignoring her. She just wouldn't let up, and it was so damn annoying. Sure enough, when the phone powered on, it alerted me that I had 17 missed calls and just as many texts, all from the contact with the name Birth Giver. Fuck! Leave me alone! I said aloud as I deleted the calls and texts. Uh-oh. Must be one of your ex-boos trying to come back. Or is it one of your stalkers whose heart you broke? Junior teased. Oh, it's a stalker, all right. It's my stalking mother, I said with a sigh. Aunt Donna? The one and only. She's been blowing me up for days because she knows I'm pissed. I can't believe her sometimes. Here's a woman who didn't give a shit about me and pretty much abandoned me, yet she still thinks she can tell me what the fuck to do. She's got some nerve. Yeah. Aunt Donna is pretty intense. I don't know what it is about her, but Pop always seems to back down when she snaps off. I've seen her and Mom go at it a couple of times over the years, too, Junior said. And it was not pretty. That's 'cause Aunt Chippy is the only one who can see through her bullshit. I hear you. Ma does have a bullshit detector on her nose. But I'm not gonna lie. Aunt Donna ain't shown me nothing but love over the years. You should have seen the wedding present she got me and Sonia. Take off the rose-colored glasses, Junior. She's a bitch, plain and simple. He looked over at me and said gently, That may or may not be true, but maybe you should just talk to her and get it over with. Seems to me the longer you avoid her, the longer you avoid the inevitable. What? I looked at him like he was crazy. I don't want to talk to her. I just want her to leave me the fuck alone. Then tell her to leave you alone. I have. And if my words haven't been enough, I've avoided her for the past 5 years. That should be obvious. Look, I get it. But maybe it's time you had a heart-to-heart with her. Put your cards on the table. When it comes down to it, Sasha, she's your mama, and you only get one of them. Do it the same way you do a Band-Aid. Just rip it off and get it over with. I thought about what Junior said, and once I let it sink in a little, it made sense. If I didn't handle this situation, it would go on just like this for years. I picked up my cell phone and said, Siri, call Birth Giver. Junior looked at me and shook his head. What? I said. You didn't think I'd have her in my phone as Mom, did you? The phone rang over and over, but there was no answer. I hit the redial button and called again. Still, she didn't answer the phone. You mind if we make a pit stop? I asked, irritated because the tables were turned, and now it was her ignoring me. No problem. We're already late as hell anyway. 15 minutes later, we pulled into my mother's driveway and parked next to her Maserati. At least now I knew she was home. Knowing her, she had some man over, and that's why she wasn't answering her phone. I'll be right back, I said, opening the car door and hopping out. I stood at the front door and rang the doorbell several times. When she didn't answer, I started banging. I knew she would be pissed. She might have been a crappy mother, but she was the queen of decorum and proper etiquette. Not only was I at her house unannounced, but I was beating on the door like I had lost my mind. I could just imagine the disgusted look she probably had on her face as she was running down the steps to scold whoever was at her door. I waited, now excited, because I was going to get the opportunity to say what I wanted to say to her face and then be done with her once and for all. Junior was right. I needed to handle this woman to woman, and if she had some dick over, who would hear it too? Then all the better. I waited a few moments more, ringing and banging, before I remembered the spare key that she kept. As bourgeois as my mother was, she was still old-fashioned in some areas of her life. She always left a key under the watering can sitting near the flower bed. I waved at Junior, who seemed to be quite entertained by all of this, and used the key to unlock the door. "Hello?" I called out when I stepped inside. No one answered. "Mom, it's me, Sasha." There were a couple of shopping bags laying discarded in the den. That was weird. She was usually pretty careful with her designer purchases, because as far as she was concerned, her wealth and style defined her. I called up the stairs a little louder. Still no answer. Her and her beau must have decided to take things up to the bedroom. I rushed up the stairs, thinking it might be funny to bust in on them in the middle of the action. But the bedroom door was open, and the room was still as pristine as ever. The bed perfectly made, her dresser lined with jewelry boxes and bottles of expensive makeup and perfume. She was nowhere to be found. I searched all the other rooms upstairs, to no avail. I walked back down the steps into the den and noticed my mother's purse on the floor in the corner. Something was wrong. My mother loved her designer bags more than she loved me. There was no way in hell she would ever allow one to touch the floor. I grabbed my gun out of my purse and headed over to search the rest of the first floor. I stepped into the dining room, and that's when I let out a scream loud enough for Junior to hear me outside. At first, I was unable to make my body move. There she was, sprawled out in the middle of the floor, a pool of blood around her head and chest.
"Mom? Mommy?"
I squeaked out, even though I already knew the truth. She was dead. Donna Washington Duncan Wilson Ferguson, my mother, was dead. I squeezed my eyes shut and told myself to wake up, because I had to be in the middle of some horrible nightmare. But then I opened them slowly, and she was still lying motionless. She was still dead.
"No!"
I screamed and ran over, collapsing onto my knees and pulling her lifeless body to me.
"Please, God, no, please, I'm so sorry. Please, Mommy."
I rocked back and forth, crying so hard I could barely breathe.
"Sasha! Sasha!"
I heard Junior calling, but I couldn't answer. Seconds later, he entered the room.
"Oh, my God. No, this can't be happening,"
I heard him whisper. Then I felt his arm around me. I continued to rock her in my arms as the tears poured down my face.
She's...
I couldn't bring myself to state the obvious.
"I know."
He sat with me for a few moments, and then I heard him dialing his phone. I thought about all the missed calls and texts that I'd ignored. She had tried over and over to reach me. Did she know something was wrong? Was she calling because she needed my help? Was someone after her?
"Yeah, Vegas, it's me. I'm over here at Aunt Donna's with Sasha. Bro, something horrible has happened."
He paused to listen, then said,
"Yeah, she's dead, and it looks like something Uncle Larry would do."
"Mommy,"
I whispered through my tears.
"I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Mommy."
"Yeah, I'm bringing her home right now,"
Junior said softly.
"Sasha, we have to go."
"No, I can't leave her. I can't,"
I wailed.
"Sasha, Please. Come on, sweetheart.
No! You don't understand. I know she's a bitch, and I know no one likes her, but she's my mom and all I had left. And now...
Sash, Junior said, reaching for me. I snatched away, still holding my mother's head against my chest.
Now she's gone, and I have no one. I have no one left. My dad is gone, and now she is too. My family is gone.
Sasha, you're not alone. You still have family. You still have me. I'm always going to be there for you. You know that. We all are. Junior's voice cracked a little. But we have to go.
I can't leave her by herself. I'm all she's got.
I looked up at him and shook my head. I have to stay with her. Sasha, you can't stay. Vegas is on his way with a team. They will make sure she's okay.
No.
We've got to get you home and get you cleaned up. Come on. Junior eased my arms from around my mother's body and pulled me up off the floor to embrace me. He held me tight and let me cry on his shoulder until I had no more tears left. Then he released me and held my hands as he looked into my eyes. It's going to be fine. We're going to find out who did this. I promise. His words sparked the fire of fury in me that I knew would be burning for a long, long time.
Stop pretending, Junior.
I turned and kneeled, leaning over to give her one final kiss. We both know who did this. It was Uncle Larry. And when I find him, he's gonna find out that he ain't the only crazy one in this family.
Orlando, 47. Okay, you're right. Going there was a bad idea, I heard London saying as she came around the corner of the motel. She stopped dead in her tracks when she spotted me leaning against my rental car. Orlando, what are you doing here? She ran up and hugged me. I hear you're having some problems getting into Tivoli Gardens, I told her, as she released me from our embrace. From the look she gave Daryl, I guess that comment had struck a nerve. I'm here to help. I turned to Daryl, giving him a pound with my fist. Sup, D? Just trying to make it, though. Good to see you, he replied. Daryl was always low-key, but for some reason he seemed a little standoffish. Yet right now, we can use all the help we can get. Don't worry. Cavalry has arrived, I said confidently. You do know Daddy and Vegas are going to lose their minds when they find out you're here, right? London gave me a disapproving look, which prompted Daryl to take a step back, glancing in every direction but ours. Now I knew what the problem was. London thought I was there to step on her toes. We've got the situation well under control, she said, full of attitude. Look, Pop and Vegas know I'm here, London. They're the ones who sent me. I saw the disappointment on London's face as her confident demeanor deflated. Yeah, I'm sure she thought my presence was the result of her failure to find Vinny Dash. But that was far from the truth. And for the record, we all think you've done a phenomenal job, I added to gas her up a little. See, London didn't get involved in the business too often, so she deserves some credit for stepping out of her stay-at-home mom role as eagerly as she had this time. You do? She perked up quickly. I was just doing the same thing any Duncan would do. Yeah, Rio told me how much of a badass you were, shooting that guy in the foot and saving Daryl's life. Daryl couldn't help but laugh along with me as I teased. Who the fuck you think you are, Annie Oakley? No, I like to think of myself as Pam Grier in Brown Sugar, London joked, laughing along with us. It seemed all she needed was that little reassurance, because her insecurities were gone, just like that. Any word on Uncle Larry and the boys? I leaned back against the car, took off my sunglasses. No, not yet. We've got eyes and ears everywhere, though, so I'm sure it won't take long. They sent me down here to help you with Vinny and your Tivoli Gardens problem. Of course, it went without saying that I didn't hesitate for a second when they told me to get on a flight to Jamaica. It was what I'd wanted all along. Orlando, getting in there is damn near impossible, London said. Didn't matter to me. Nothing was going to dampen my spirits now that I was one step closer to getting my son back. So I've been told. But as Pop always says, nothing's impossible. Just depends on how much you're willing to give up to get it. You sound awfully confident, Daryl said. Time to take the fight to him, D. Come on. Grab your stuff and let's go, I said. Where are we going? London asked. The Sheraton. Unless you prefer to stay in this place. I gave the raggedy motel the once-over and chuckled. Nobody back home was going to believe that my bougie-ass sister had even dared to stay in a place like this. I was starting to see there was more to London than any of us had given her credit for. Hell no! Hot showers and decent bedding, here I come, my sister said happily. It was an early afternoon by the time I got London and Daryl checked in. I told them to meet me in the presidential suite in half an hour, and they were actually on time. Come on in, I said, opening the door, then gesturing for them to follow me. We walked past a half dozen Asian men wearing headphones and working on computers. What's going on? London asked. Why don't I let our host explain that? I waved my hand at Jun Ching, who took off his headphones and walked over to me. Jun, this is my sister London, one of my main guys, Daryl. Him? I already know, Daryl said, stepping up so the two of them could share a brotherly embrace. Good to see you, Jun. It's been a long time. Yes, it has, my friend. Jun politely shook London's hand. Pleasure to meet you. Nice to meet you, she replied. Now can someone tell me what's going on here? June and his people have agreed to work with us on taking care of the Tivoli Gardens problem we are having, I told London and Daryl. How? If we can't get into West Kingston without being detected and we're black, how are his people going to manage to do this, London asked. I shot a glance at June to see if he had been offended by her comment, but if anything, he seemed amused. My people are invisible, June said with a smirk. London rolled her eyes as if June had a screw loose. Excuse me, what did you say? I answered for June. You heard him, and he's correct to an extent. His people are invisible, London. Maybe not literally, but figuratively. Have you had the chance to enter any grocery stores while you've been here? June asked her. One or two, London shrugged. She still wasn't getting the point. And did you notice anything about them? June continued. London looked at him, her face full of confusion. They all have food in them? June laughed and said, yes, that is true. But they also had Asian workers, which you did not even notice. Son of a bitch, Daryl nodded his head. Clearly, he understood what June was getting at. Look, can someone tell me what the hell is going on? London sounded totally frustrated, so June patiently explained it to her. All the major food stores on the island are owned and run by my people, June said matter-of-factly. Locals don't pay attention to us. We're like furniture to them. You're invisible! Yeah, now I get it, London said, looking almost relieved that she now understood. I guess after being out of the loop with the business for so long, she didn't like to feel stupid or uninformed. We can get into every neighborhood in this country, including Tivoli Gardens and anywhere else that yellow Lamborghini you have been searching for goes. You know the apartment building downtown that you follow Vinny from? I asked. Yeah, London replied. I pointed at a computer screen that was divided into four video images. Take a look at this monitor. Is this in real time? She asked, as she watched over two dozen Asian men walk in the building and then, in another quadrant of the screen, the same men stormed the apartment. It happened about 5 minutes ago, right before you arrived, June responded. Did they capture Vinny? Vinny was not there, but his men who were, the ones that are alive, have been taken to our safe house in St. Mary's. Locating him will not be a problem, I assure you, June said. One of the Asian men brought over a cell phone and held it out for June to talk. June stepped away and carried on a short conversation in Chinese. When he ended the call, he said to us, "We've located the house in Tivoli Gardens where the yellow Lamborghini has been seen, and it has been confirmed that a white man with an island woman and child live there. My people are heading there now to take care of it. We should know something in the next 10 to 15 minutes." "Are you sure you want them to do this?" London asked me. I guess I looked worried, because June read my expression and said to reassure me. I've given them specific instructions that they are not to harm the woman or the child. He paused for a second and then added, provided the woman does not become involved, of course. However, should she pose a threat, take her out. I reply before he could finish. If she gets in the way, take her fucking ass out.
Ruby, 48. Blake had been avoiding me ever since I'd asked him to find out if Vinny was behind my brother's death. I got the feeling that it was more by design than coincidence, and I was starting to get pissed and a little worried. Most times, he was the one who stayed close to the house, keeping an eye on Vincent and me, but I hadn't seen him in days, and that wasn't a good sign for any of Vinny's men. Thankfully, my heart jumped for joy when I looked out the kitchen window and saw his jeep pulling up.
"It's been 4 days since, Miss Inya. Where you been? Vincent has been asking for you."
I ran and buried my head into his chest the second he walked into the house. I may have used Vincent as an excuse, but I'm sure he knew I was worried about him from the strength of my hug. I was confused, scared, and overwhelmed at the same time. When we separated after a few moments, I took a step back and I said,
"I don't know why, but me thought you was dead."
"No, girl. I'm alive. I've been looking into some things,"
he said hesitantly, taking a glass and filling it with water.
"Well, did you find anything?"
His eyes softened. In that moment, I saw how much he had aged since the first time we met. He was only 15 years older than I was, but he seemed much older now. His hair was grayer, and there were worry lines on his face.
"Blake, did you?"
He took a sip of water, then placed the glass down, looking around the corner as if he expected someone to be there.
"I think so, but we can't talk here. Your husband has ears everywhere."
"Why don't we take Vincent for a walk?" I suggested.
"That's a good idea," he said.
The front door suddenly opened, startling both of us, as Vinny and his men came rushing inside. I quickly wiped my face and recomposed myself, not wanting Vinny to see my tears.
"Ruby!"
I heard him call up the stairs. He had run past the kitchen so fast he didn't even see Blake and me.
"Ruby! I'm right here, Vinny!" I yelled.
He ran into the kitchen, his face flushed and perspiration pouring from his forehead.
"What's wrong? What happened?" I asked.
"They're after us. They came to the office looking for me. They shot the entire fucking place up. 10 of my men are dead."
He was panting as he paced around the kitchen.
"Who? The Duncans? I told you not to trust the uncle."
I felt myself beginning to panic. My life was going from bad to worse. I was married to one killer while on the run from another, who also happened to be the father of my child.
"No, not the fucking Duncans. The Chinese," he snapped.
"Chinese? But why? Why would they be after us?"
I became even more confused and nervous as I waited for his answer. Now, not only were we running from the Duncans, but Asians as well. It was becoming too much for me.
"I don't know."
He shook his head and slumped into a chair.
"What did you do?"
I asked. The way Blake had been acting before, I was quite sure he was going to deliver some bad news to me about the true facts of my brother's death, so now I couldn't put much faith in anything Vinny said. Who knew what was the truth anymore?
"What do you mean? What did I do? I didn't do nothing."
"Lies. Why do you keep telling me lies?"
I stared at him angrily until he relented.
"Okay, okay. It probably has something to do with the containers,"
Vinny replied.
"What containers?"
"The containers we got the dope from. They belong to some Chinese dudes. I just don't know how they found out it was us. I thought I covered my tracks pretty well."
"Well, evidently you didn't."
I was starting to think that whether he killed my brother or not, maybe it was time to separate myself from Vinny.
"That explains the groceries. Now it all makes sense,"
one of Vinny's men mumbled. I suddenly remembered what he was talking about.
I gasped. The man making the food delivery.
What the fuck are y'all talking?